Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, right now, the views of Barry Shamish. And we're going to tell you the third chapter of the Return of the Giants. Barry, thank you so very much for being with us again.
Well, forget me. How are you feeling?
Oh, I'm doing fine. I just a little sleepy, but I'll be back on my feet in full force before the program is over. So you're going to have to do most of the story.
Well, don't I always?
Go right ahead.
Look, I'm glad you're feeling well. I'm sorry you're feeling a little sleepy, but what the heck? You know, to begin with, if this were a normal show, I would go on to the horrible threats the Arabs this week have given Israel, that it now has in Lebanon an anti-aircraft system straight from the Russians, and that Hamas has now got Grad missiles, and they can knock out Ashkelon, and all this would be a normal show. And I mean, this is just the way things are going with Israel. I mean, what's a shock that the Arabs are going to get an anti-aircraft system? That's the only last defense Israel has, is its air force. Of course they're going to get an aircraft system, barring some miraculous tactical decision made at the IDF headquarters. The IDF will lose the next war. Or, by the way, lose is very, very loose here. If you have a country bombarded with missiles and you have thousands dead, that's losing. Israel lost the Yom Kippur War, even though it won the war. Losing 3,000 men in 4 days for a country that small is losing the war. Losing 30,000 people on the first day of the war is losing the war. No matter if Israel survives as a state, it's not surviving as a state. But we're not going to do that. We're going to go into my book, Return of the Giants, and that DVD I sent you, and this is on the DVD. And in a way, I'm very grateful to you for listening to this, because I've held it in for many, many years, not wanting to damage the integrity, first of all, of my Rabin book, and wanting to put on trial the murderers of the Prime Minister of Israel. But that's all gone now. There's no hope of that. The withdrawal from the Shohevet neighborhood, which the IDF, of course, 3,000 soldiers, who now finally the Israel National News is admitting are not Israelis, they're not Jews. They've got quotes from the soldiers speaking in bad Hebrew to each other that we're going to get these Jews, and who said we were here for any other reason but to get these Jews, and don't bother me, you stupid Jew. All this was heard from the soldiers attacking Hebron, and now it's coming back from the days of Gaza again, that in fact the IDF recruited soldiers from all over the world to destroy real Judaism.
Okay, well, you hang on to that thought, and we're going to be right back here in just a moment with Barry Shamish.
Commercial.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and this afternoon we're going to have a Barry Shamish visit, but I'm going to ask Barry if he'll hang up. We're going to see if we get a better line. So if you'll hang up, we'll be right with you, okay?
Sure.
Okay.
I've hung up.
Okay. Hang on there. We'll be right back in just a moment with Barry. But now for our listeners here, why our This afternoon, we're going to have Barry Shamish again. And those who have heard him before know that he's an Israeli patriot. He believes that there is a sect within Judaism that is responsible for so much of the anti-Semitism today, a group which, of course, are Sabbateans or Frankists, who have a different agenda and who are in positions of power and who hate Israel. But, of course, they work in concert with people here in the United States, and they are part of this whole movement to bring about a one-world government and a one-world religion. But, of course, this afternoon we're going to be talking on a different subject. We're going to be talking about a book that Barry has written some years ago when he was an expert on UFOs, and he doesn't ordinarily bring this up because, of course, well, it sounds pretty far out to many people. Doesn't sound far out to me because this is well documented. And in fact, he recently sent me a DVD where we actually see Barry Shamish on a number of American television programs recorded during the late 1980s and early 1990s that deal with a UFO phenomenon in Israel. So this will be the third in a series of talks on the return of the giants. And without further ado, Barry, you pick up the story. Okay, let's see. Barry, you go ahead and pick up the story.
All right, I think the fan was on. That's the only reason for the buzz. I turned the fan off.
Okay.
All right, it's 1991 December. Now, there are two major incidents in 1991, but the first incident, which is on that DVD I sent you, is that a police chief in Israel, the chief of police of the Beit Shan Police Department, his name was Yitzhak Mordechai, was very brave and went on air to tell about the day that between 300 to 500 Israelis, 300 soldiers, about 200 civilians, chased a UFO all night long in the Beit Shan Valley. Now, here's this story. We start with Yossi Ben-Maoz. He is heading home to Beit Shan.
All right, you hold that thought. We're going to be right back in just a moment here with all of our stations on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Barry is telling the story about the police chief, who, along with a number of police officers and hundreds of Israelis, saw a UFO and actually chased it for some hours. So you pick up the story there, Barry.
Well, this is a very dramatic incident. It was on December 3rd, 1991. And please remember December 91 because we will slowly go to another incident where this UFO was filmed. But what happens is when Yossi Ben-Maoz, who is on the DVD, explains he's driving home at 3 in the morning, and he sees an aircraft following the taxi. And he decides it's probably an enemy aircraft by its behavior, and he explains why on the DVD again. But neither here nor there, he stops at the first phone. These were the days before cell phones. And he phones the Beit Shan police. A squad car comes out to the Beit Shan Industrial District, and they see this UFO in the sky above the taxi. The squad car decides that this is not of the Israeli Air Force. It's a banana-shaped UFO. Again, the ultimate description, about 15 feet in diameter. That seems to be everybody's consensus. And he phones the police chief at, about 3:15 in the morning, and Yitzhak Mordechai gets his clothes on and runs to the Beit Shan Industrial Center and meets Yossi Ben-Maoz and looks at this thing hovering above the taxi, about, they estimate, 150 yards up. And he decides this is a national emergency. And first thing he does, he phones the Air Force. Now, there's a base nearby. It's called Ramat David. I served on it. It's the second largest air base in Israel. He manages, however the police do this in Israel, to get their radar department, and there's nothing on the screens, but the Air Force is alerted, and they send a whole bunch of soldiers to the Beichan industrial region. This is followed by the police emergency squad. Another about 100 policemen arrive. There are about 300 soldiers and police in the Beichan Industrial Park by about 3:35 or 3:40. A huge convoy of armed men are now under this, well, banana-shaped, 15-diameter machine. There's no word for it. It's a craft. And then they alert the kibbutzim in the region to set up security. There's been an attack. The kibbutzim send about another 100 men. There are about, I'd say, 400. According to Yitzchak, it was between 300 and 500 armed men start following the UFO. Now, the UFO starts traveling towards the Jordanian border, which is not very far away, maybe 10 miles. And now there are about 400 armed men following the UFO. And this, I'm going to repeat again, when the crew of the TV show Sightings came to Israel, this is what they want to see most, because this is an official reaction. Yitzchak Mordechai, a very, very nice man, was the chief of police of Beit Shan, and he was the one leading this squadron in the chase of a UFO. They were chasing a UFO. Now, this UFO was a very smart UFO, apparently. It reached the Jordanian border, and then it turned back towards Beit Shan, dragging the convoy with it. Now, I discussed with Yitzchak Mordechai, did this UFO really know where the Jordanian border was? I mean, really, are they that good that they knew where the border ended and Israel stopped? And I came up with an idea that I think it's a good idea. I said, Rav Pakad, chief of police, I said to him, maybe they knew there was nowhere else to go because you stopped. You couldn't go into Jordan, so it stopped. And he nodded his head, and he said, I hadn't thought of that. That makes perfect sense. And then the UFO went back towards Beit Shan, dragging 400 armed men with it. Now, it does a circular, journey. Let's call it a journey. But it ends up under the kibbutz Ma'oz Chaim. That is where the UFO finally decides enough is enough. We're going to stop. And it stays in the sky about 150 yards. That's all. That's what everyone decided was about 150 yards above them was this UFO. Now, it was doing sort of funny tricks. It was moving a little to left, a little to right at impossible angles. The Air Force confirmed it wasn't one of theirs. There were Air Force shooters there. In those days, by the way, I could have been one of them. I wasn't, neither here nor there. At 6:30 in the morning, the sun finally gets up. It's December. And a soldier comes up to Police Chief Mordechai and says, should we shoot it down? And he's got the equipment to shoot it down. They have handheld missiles. In those days, it would have been Stingers and Red Eyes, and they could have taken a shot at it. And Yitzchak Mordechai said something very wise. He said, they didn't shoot at us. Why should we shoot at it? And that was it. It was not shot at. It was very, if it wasn't for Police Chief Yitzchak Mordechai, Israel would have shot a bunch of missiles at this thing. But it didn't turn out that way. The missile disappeared when the sun came up. And that was the end of that, except for one thing. It returns about, less than 2 weeks later, and this is the beginning of Kadima. Do I hear music?
No, you don't. You go right ahead.
All right. This Ste Moshe is a moshav not very far from Kadima, 2 miles. Now, I went there. I had met Eli Cohen. Eli Cohen had filmed. It's Israel's second film, the UFO. The first film, the UFO, was in Haifa, 1988. That's also on the DVD I sent you. This was the second film UFO, but it's very significant because it's the only film of the UFO that apparently in 1993 was harassing Kadima and apparently had the giants within, the Nephilim, the Zamzumim, the Rephaim. The giants of the Bible landed in Kadima primarily. There were other spots, but primarily in Kadima about a year and a half later. But in December, around 20th, I looked through my book, but we had a family emergency, and I stopped reading, and I could get the date for you at a next time we speak. But it was about 2 weeks after the incident in the Beit Shan Valley, where 400 armed men are following a UFO for 3.5 hours, no less. We now have a UFO notice by one Ellie Cohen. Now, Ellie Cohen was a young, I would guess, 30 years old, a good-looking man. He was a Moroccan businessman. He made furniture. We ended up buying two of our sofas from him. He was a good guy. And he described the first night he was up playing cards with friends, and his whole apartment got lit up. Something outside lit up the apartment. They went outside, they look in the sky, there is a light they can't explain, it's doing impossible circles, it's doing things no helicopter or jet that we know about can do, and this bothered him. The next day he's at home, and this time his house is lit up, and he's alone, and he looks around for his gun. He describes the whole situation, where he doesn't dare turn on the lights. It's about 4 a.m. If he turns off the lights, he figures they'll be able to spot him, whatever it is, and he'll be a target. So in the dark, he finds his personal weapon. He takes up the gun and goes outside, and there is the UFO above his house, beaming lights into it for, I don't know why they beam lights into a house. I don't even know why they choose the houses they beam lights into. But Ellie Cohen's house was chosen. He's standing outside with his rifle. He's got a young wife who, by the way, was just absolutely shattered by this experience. She didn't want to talk about it. She wasn't even very helpful about letting us in the house. But he was protecting his young daughter and his young wife. She was about 24, 25, standing outside with a gun. And the UFO eventually went off into the sky, and that day he said, I'm getting myself a video camera. If this thing comes back, I want to capture it on film. Well, the next night, wouldn't you know it, it came back. This time he didn't look for his gun. He grabbed the video camera, and he filmed this thing. It was from about 6 in the morning to about 6:30 when the sun came up. Now, what made the UFO that he videotape so special, he got the last minute or two in broad daylight. We actually see this thing. And that's the UFO, of course, that sightings were more than delighted with. They got a UFO in broad daylight. Now I hear music.
Now you go music, but I'll tell you when to stop. Go right ahead.
All right. Now remember something important. This was 2 miles from Kadima. We will know why this is important because on March the 20th of 1993, this UFO or one of its people, God knows what landed in the backyard of Tzipor Carmel, starting off the giant wave in Israel.
All right, fine. So basically then, Israel seems to be targeted with this. What's really so interesting to me is, of course, I'd never heard about this at all until we had a chance to talk to Barry. In fact, it's only recently that he's broached the subject of the return of the giants, and yet, of course, the supernatural is something that we must understand today. Go right ahead, Barry.
Well, supernatural is simply the word because Ellie Cohen was not a New Age advocate in any sense of the word. He was a businessman who made furniture, and he was a very nice man, and the last thing in the world you would expect him to do is report a UFO, but he not only reported it, he filmed it. Now, he kept this film buried until the big wave hit in beginning March 20th of 1993 in Kadima, 2 miles away. That's all it was. Now, we begin with a very famous story, in a way because she loved seeing the first UFO giant. That was Tzipporat Carmel, which, again, is on this DVD. We meet Tzipporat Carmel. I liked her a lot, by the way. I mean, very easygoing. If a person doesn't attack me, I like them. You know, if they attack me, I don't like them.
Go right ahead.
Tzipporat was a new, well, I don't know if she was, but she was certainly of the type to be an advocate of the New Age. That is for certain. A very pretty woman. Yes, she was a travel agent. I recall that she even arranged a trip or two for people who came in for the UFO subject. She was a travel agent. Now, here's her story. Now, keep in mind that every story I tell you, there are six women altogether, all age 39, all of them, by the way, the same age, a lot of them. Four of them were from Kadima, one was from Rishon LeZion, one was from Holon. These were the four women, these six women who saw the giants with their own eyes. And believe me, they didn't know each other. Now, by the way, I was on a TV show, it's called The Ruby Show, after the most serious incidents passed. Israel was so shocked by them that a show was arranged on Channel 2. And by the way, in 1993, we only had two channels. So half the country watched us, if not more. And finally, I got invited onto a show in Israel about UFOs. And I said to Ruby, that was the hostess, and by the way, I might add, all the women, a good proportion of the women were on this show, as well as major ufologists, and I use the word major seriously. Such a thing did exist in Israel. These were people with very, very good analytical minds who worked with me, who helped me collect the UFO videos that I did collect. And one worked, David Rotem, it was his name, he worked for Ma'ariv. He had his own column in Ma'ariv, believe it or not, a column devoted mostly to UFOs. There were so many of them back then. And Ruby came up to me with her microphone, and she asked me what I think is going on. I said, Ruby, there are six women here who don't know each other, who all describe the same seven-foot giants with the round heads and no nose, hardly any nose, barely a mouth, black eyebrows, big round eyes, wearing very silvery clothing that to some glowed like neon, to some it was just silver. I said, either giants have arrived in Israel or six women who don't know each other.
Hold that thought. Hold that thought.
Oh, boy, that, you missed the point here.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Barry is telling us about something that had happened then not too far away from what we've been talking about, where Mr. Cohen had actually filmed the UFOs. And then it wasn't too long after that in the place called Kadima, where four women and elsewhere, two other women, all 39 years of age, saw the giants. Now, the women didn't know one another. The women certainly had no connections with one another. And they all told this story about these seven-foot creatures with round heads and deep eyes and no eyebrows and hardly a mouth and wearing silvery clothing that they all encountered. They all told the same story, even though they were separated by distances. But yet four of them were in Kadima. And so, of course, this creates quite a stir over there in Israel. Barry is invited to be on some of the, or at least one of the major television programs because he is one of the primary investigators. So you pick up the story, Barry.
Well, they had black eyebrows.
They did have black eyebrows.
Yes,
okay.
They all describe black eyebrows. The point I made to Ruby, I guess we have to go backwards, is that either six women who don't know each other all got together on one night and decided to fool the entire country of Israel, or there are giants running around this country. You've got a choice here. Use your logic. These women did not get together in somebody's salon and decide we're going to pull the greatest farce this country has ever seen. We're going to all say we saw the same seven-foot giants. Obviously, that's not what happened. And that point, I think, went over very well on TV. A lot of people told me they thought I made a very strong point that it was no conspiracy here. It was, in fact, women of the same age seeing seven-foot giants. Now, I want to make a very, very strong point. March 20th, 1993, and the last witness was Batya Shimon. We'll get to her shortly. She was in July of 1993 at the end of the month. This was when the Oslo Accords were being written, and in July of 1993, that's when they were finished. Now, I went to UFO conferences all over the world, in Brazil, in Australia, in Hong Kong, I mean all over the world, Italy, Britain, with this DVD. What you're seeing on this DVD is essentially what I showed audiences. And I told them I could not figure out what was so important about March 20th, July of 1993, except that Israel is going to be destroyed. This was the Oslo so-called war accords. Well, actually, they called them peace accords, but I knew then that they were war accords, and that's a different story. But it's connected, and I do connect this book I wrote, Return of the Giants. Nonetheless, at that moment, the giants returned to Israel. Now, when I wrote Return of the Giants, I did something unusual. I read the Old Testament from beginning to end. I look for reports of giants. The last giant in the Old Testament, Anakim, I believe, the giant, was David's cousin, Seth, who killed a giant with six fingers and six toes. So that means there were no reports of giants in Israel for 3,200 years. And then suddenly in March of 93, we're being swamped with reports about giants. We start with the first giant, Tzipporot Carmel. And by the way, every giant sighting was on the Sabbath, the Shabbat. All of them were on the Shabbat. And go and figure that one out. And later on in my book, I look at all the major reports. Ami Akrei, the day before Yom Kippur, they were all on Jewish holidays if they weren't on the Shabbat. And this is very, very spooky. And I don't know what it has to say about the Torah and what it means, but they were all on the Shabbat or Jewish holidays, and that has got to mean something. Okay, I mean, you're asking the wrong person to tell you what it means. I'm the last person who has the answer to what that means, but this was a fact. Tzipporot Carmel wakes up early in the morning, Saturday, it was March 20th, something compels her to walk outside. She leaves her kadima behind her. It's a large field.
And you hold that thought for just a moment. We'll be right back. Barry, well, this woman goes out, she goes outside, and behind her home is a large field. And is she living in Kadima?
You bet she is.
All right, go ahead.
All right. Now, this is also an orange orchard. There are fruit trees. It's a very large field. It's not just a yard. And she looks outside, and she sees the craft. First of all, let's talk about the craft. She sees a silver, aluminum, she thought at first. What she thought was a fruit silo. She says to herself, why would someone put up a fruit silo in my backyard in the middle of the night? That was her first thought. And then the fruit silo, she says, on the air, grows into a second story. It's before her eyes, flashing light she sees. She sees the one-story fruit silo become two stories. Then her eyes dart. There is a path. And there, at the end of this path, there's a seven-foot giant seemingly picking up a flora from the region, examining the flora. And you would think if these people can travel through dimensions of space, the last thing they would be interested in are the weeds of Kadima. Okay, I mean, this is another story, is what they were interested, these people. Very simplistic, uninteresting things. But she looks at it, and it's wearing what she describes as a beekeeper's hat. Something was hiding its face. But now she looks at it, and it looks at her. They're staring at each other from, let's say, 30, 40 yards distance. And she realizes what's going on. Being the New Age sea poet that many of us came to know and love, she says to it, take off your hat so I can see your face. She says to it that. And it replies to her telepathically. She hears the reply in the Hebrew, Lo yachol. The being says to her, I can't do that. And then the being says to her, go back into your house. I've got work to do. And she goes back into her house. She comes out a little later. The craft is gone. The being is gone. But the ring is in her backyard. And I'm not exactly sure how the ufologist found out about the ring. I just know this.
Hold that thought right there, Barry.
All right.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, the first of the women to encounter the giants is Kadima, and this woman goes out of her home. There's a big orange orchard in her backyard, and she goes out. She sees this craft. I mean, it's a big aluminum craft, and she walks down, and she sees this being. He's about 7 foot tall, wearing some sort of a headpiece so that she really can't see the man's face or the creature's face. And she really is rather fearless. She's about 30 or 40 yards away from him, and she tells him to remove his mask so she can see his face. He speaks perfect Hebrew. He says, go away. I can't do that. Go away. And she does. She comes back later. And the craft and the creature are gone, this seven-foot giant. But there apparently is some sort of a ring there on the ground. So when other ufologists come, they are convinced that this story is real. So pick up the story there, Barry.
Well, the ring, it was the second ring that brought the ufologists.
Okay.
It was on March 30th, 10 days later, same thing. In her backyard, there's another UFO. And this time she's got two rings in her backyard. And if you look at the DVD, you'll see the ring. Now, I went into the ring a year later. Nothing grew in it. It was scraggly, brown, desiccated ground. All around was all green. Now, remember, March in Israel is the rainy season. Everything is bright and full of vegetation. Where these UFOs were was nothing. It was brown, desiccated, wasted ground. And once again, the circles were 15 feet in diameter, just like the UFO that Eli Cohen had filmed. It matched it Identically. Now, we won't go back to our previous show with Ami Akrai. His UFO is also 15 feet in diameter. Nonetheless, this time the ufologists descend on Kadima, and they measure the ground, and they take samples. And many of them feel very fluish when they leave the rings. And I got that same feeling, by the way, when I went to the ring. I felt nauseous, absolutely nauseous. I remember asking her for a couple of painkillers. I felt awful in there. And nothing was going a year later. When I went into the rings, they were there. You know what, people? If you want the DVD, I'll tell you how to get it before we go on to the next.
Why don't we just go right ahead, and let's get your website out as well so people can know how they can get your material, and also give that address at lulu.com where they can get a copy of your book, The Return of the Giants.
A good idea. For the book, I've now put it up on lulu.com. It's a marvelous self-publishing website where they'll send a wonderful book to you right to your home within a week, lulu.com. It says search. You write in my name, Chamish, and you'll get to Return of the Giants along with other books. I also recommend Return of the Giants. Bye Bye Gaza. If you want to know how Israel's, well, on the way to being finished, as near as I can figure, we're near the end of Israel very shortly. But let's stick with the Giants. There may be some reason that Israel was chosen. Remember, people, these UFOs, these giants, they were not seen in Lebanon or Syria or Jordan. They were all Israel. And there's got to be a reason for that as well. I would have loved for Damascus to be filled with giants.
Well, you have to remember, Barry, that between man's plan in time and God's plan in eternity, there's an infinite quality of difference, and we're not necessarily let in at what God's plan is, but I agree with you, there is a reason they came there, and I believe that a God allowed them to be there, or put them there, or permitted them to be there for a purpose. Hopefully one day we'll know.
Well, phone me. I'm going to do something unusual. And by the way, I mean, we're not talking a big seller, but 20 people have actually phoned me and ordered my DVD. It's about almost an hour in length, and it's got professional, it's got the four shows from sightings, one from primetime Fox TV, where they spent almost half an hour on my work. You phone me if you're interested. You go 904-501-7605, 904-501-7605, or email me. Chamish, Chamish, at netvision, netvision.net, net.il. That's Chamish at netvision.net.il. For $20, I'll send this to you without a label. It's a very primitive DVD. Later, I'll fix it up a bit. But nonetheless, you'll see Tzipora Carmel, and you'll see her showing her circles, the pictures of the rings. But then we go on to the next one, which is it's now in April of 1993, her neighbor Shosh Carmel. Shosh Yehud. Now, this is a very different woman than Tzipora Carmel. Shosh Yehud is the town treasurer of Kadima. She is a very straight-laced woman. She's a Moroccan woman, I believe. She has another story, and it's a beauty. Now, Tzipora and Shosh were not friends, but they did know each other by face because Shosh lived only down the block. It was really an issue of 100 yards between these two. Now, Shosh is such a straight-laced woman compared to Tzipora. Night and day personality-wise, but they're both 39 years old. And we'll get to the significance of that. There is plenty of significance. Nonetheless, Shorsha's story is the following. Her husband at the time was not sleeping in her bed. He was sleeping on the sofa. It was more comfortable. But he saw the house light up and went back to sleep. All the women were telepathically told by these giants they are not there to harm them. And all the women believed them. This is the story I got time after time. They got a message in their head in the Hebrew, we're not going to harm you. And all of them felt that they were rather friendly creatures. All of them felt the same way. They were friendly. This creature, now, I want you to know this. Shosha's creature was not outside. It went into her bedroom. Now, her bedroom is blocked. The blinds were down. And in Israel, blinds aren't like America, a piece of plastic that you pull a cord. They're actual blinds. In order for this creature to get into the house, it would have had to go through the wall or through the blinds in the window. And there was no damage. These people are not a physical people. These beings, humanoids, aliens, whatever you want to call them, they are not of our physical nature. They can go through walls. Just accept it, because that's what happened to Tzipor Carmel. She's in bed, and once again, a 7-foot giant, round-headed, no nose, well, barely any nose, barely any mouth, wearing neon clothing, floating, by the way, not walking, floating around her bed, just looks at her. And says, don't worry, I'm not here to harm you, and leaves. As far as she remembers, he leaves. She thought she had a bad dream. In the morning, she opens her blinds, and there in her backyard is the 15-diameter circle, and she's got a very, very small backyard. It's not like Tziporot. That thing fit precisely into her backyard. I was there a year later. Nothing was growing in that perfect circle. Perfectly round circle, desiccated, dead, nothing was growing in it. And then the ufologist descended on Kadima. She went to a local Kadima scientist. He was a guy with a magnometer and different equipment to measure this circle. Now, here's the part that it's a very important part. Inside her circle and inside Tzipora's circle, the second circle, not the first circle, were shards of an aluminum-looking metal. There were fragments all through the circle of metal. Now, and also there was an oil, a red oil, all through Tzipora's, well, everybody's circles had this red oil. Now, we tested the oil, and again, on this DVD, you'll see a hand going into a circle and coming out red. Now, I want you to know, I went into a couple of circles where my hand was red. You could squeeze this oil out, and it would dribble. And I said to myself, my Lord, this stuff could be radioactive. I didn't know what was on my hands. I washed them. It was very hard to get out. This stuff really stuck to your hand. And I got very paranoid when I got this on my hand. I said, I don't know what the heck this stuff is. It came from something that left this circle in the backyard. I'm sticking my hand in it. What am I, Indiana Jones here, I'm fearless. I wanted that stuff off my hands. And I tried washing it with soap. It didn't react to soap. Everyone who stuck their hands in these circles got this red material on their hands. Now, later on, we had to test it. Sightings did their own testing, and it's on the DVD. I repeat over and over again. It's a good DVD. The circle, the oil within the circle was fairly normal. It had lots of iron. It had aluminum. But suddenly on this graph, at sightings, you'd see a big jump in the graph under cadmium. It was filled with cadmium. And cadmium, by the way, is not normally an oil. Far from it, cadmium is a mineral. But nonetheless, this oil was filled with cadmium. And now you've got a lot of people asking questions in Israel. What on earth were these circles? Why were they picking on these two women? And then you have the third woman. Now, Hannah Somech, again, a very solid woman, down to earth. She lived in Burgata, again, about a mile and a half from Kadima. And as I say, I liked her as well. She was very straightforward with her story, but what a story she's got. Hannah Somech, Friday night, as usual, they're always Friday night or Saturday morning. It's always a Sabbath. Her house lights up. That's also typical. She goes to the kitchen. Now, she's got a pet poodle. The poodle suddenly lifts in the air and slams against the kitchen wall and lands totally dazed. And she can't figure this out. And she sees that outside there's a light. So she tries to walk through the kitchen, the patio door, and she's blocked. Something is blocking her way. She can't get outside. And she looks outside and examining her husband's pickup truck. You know, again, I say the same thing. You've traveled 6,000 light years away. Do you really want to look at a pickup truck? But I guess they did because that's what it was doing. She sees the same 7-foot giant with the same description. And by the way, the sightings crew had all the women describe the giants. And if you look at their pictures, they all drew the same giants. And this one, though, Hannah is really mad. She's a mad woman. And she says to the giant, "What did you do with my dog?" That was her first reaction. She knew this giant flung her dog against the kitchen wall, and she was really ticked off. And she said to this creature, "What do you do with my dog?" The creature turns to her and says, "Lady, I'm busy. I've got work to do. I could throw you against the wall. Go back to your husband. Go away from here." This is what she remembers, and this is what she tells the TV. And she told me this well before, of course, in preparation for the TV show, I went to all these people and interviewed them. This woman was really ticked off that her dog was hurt. Okay, it's that simple. Now, what her reaction was a human reaction. She didn't care about her own life. She wanted to know why her dog was hurt, and she was told to go away. Now, in case you think that these creatures are imparting wise thoughts to anybody, you're wrong. They told her to get lost, that they were looking at the truck. Now, Hannah did that. She got lost, but she phoned her husband. Her husband was on patrol, I believe, was her explanation. The husband returned home. They went looking for the creature. In the morning, well, in her backyard, it's a 15-foot diameter circle, filled with these shards and this oil, but it doesn't end there. I came with the sightings crew, and her house was haunted. She had these circles, not just on the ground, they were in the tree. Now, her in the trees above the ground, in the bushes, we were taking the camera. These circles were everywhere. Now, her daughter lived 100 yards away. One of these circles was right against her house, and the daughter felt that she was being watched by these creatures, and she ran to her mother. This was a haunting story. You know what? All these movies about hauntings, they don't know anything. These women really live this stuff. Now, here is the part you should know. Hannah Somech produced documents for the sighting show. She was pregnant 25 years before when she was 19 years old, and she showed us the documents. She She didn't know where the pregnancy came from. Then the pregnancy left her. She showed us the documents. I hear the music.
You hear the music. In other words, she doesn't know how she got pregnant. She doesn't know. And, of course, most women would know how they got pregnant. But she didn't. And then, so did the pregnancy had disappeared. The whole story is incredible. But, I mean, if you believe in the Bible, if you're a Christian listening to the program, you have to accept the supernatural, because the Bible frequently speaks of the supernatural, both the Old Testament and the New Testament. We're going to be back here in just a moment or two to wrap up today's program.
Oh, we haven't finished the Giants.
Well, we will. We're going to have to get you back again for that. Well, Barry, you got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Oh, my. I was going to go on to the next witness.
Oh, go ahead. Go right ahead.
Well, okay. Batya Shimon wakes up in the middle of the night. She's got two giants in her bedroom. They tell her not to be afraid. Her husband doesn't remember a thing. He's sleeping next to her. They roam her apartment. They get very excited. One giant sees her son's aquarium, calls the other giant over. Look, the next night, her house is filled with them. Now, this is a different story because she is on the seventh floor of an apartment building in Rishon LeZion. I suggest that tomorrow night at midnight on your show, I start from there and maybe work backwards if your audience tomorrow has never heard this story. Just remember, people, the Nephilim returned to Israel. I got major TV networks worldwide to come to Israel and examine this story. It passed with flying colors. Flying colors. This was all corroborated. The circles were in the backyards. The shards were tested. We'll talk about that tomorrow night. The oil was tested. This story is, well, what can I tell you, people? The Giants returned to Israel in 1993, while the Oslo War Accord, which was destroying the country, was being written. And if you think I know why, you don't know me one little bit.
In other words, you don't know you're a reporter, but you were fascinated by this story. And of course, you realize it has something to do with the Bible, but you're not quite sure what. Would that be a fair statement?
That's okay. Let me tell you something. To this day, I might have done the book and the DVD. I don't know what on earth I was reporting. I'm just doing it to you accurately, and if you come up with something, good for you, because I have no conclusions, only that the timing was the same timing as the end of Israel.
Well, one thing, let's get your webpage out. So
go to BarryChalmers.com. It'll take you to my website. Go to Lulu.com, write in my name, and you'll get the book Return of the Giants. Write me at chambers@netvision.net.il, and I'll send you the DVD. I guess that covers it.
That covers it very well. Well, we'll look forward to talking to you tomorrow evening, Barry, and thanks very much for being with us and for carrying the program. You did a great job, as always.
No, you had a medical difficulty today. It sounds like you came out of it very well.
I'm doing fine. God bless. Thanks very much, Barry.
See you later.
We'll talk
to
you tomorrow. Right. Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and a lot of people are going to think this is fairly way out. I mean, the unidentified flying objects, I mean, UFOs, strange creatures, and yet, why, of course, many, many people have seen them. I do not believe that they're from another planet. I believe that they are manifestations of the other dimension, and there is another dimension there. We carry a book called Alien Encounters. We think it's excellent, and it gives you an overview of the spiritual component behind these UFOs, unidentified flying objects. But certainly there's much more we have. Of course, we have the spore tape set on the supernatural, and it's interviews with Joanna Michelson, who is a medium who can actually contact the other dimension. And then, of course, we have the books that she wrote, The Beautiful Side of Evil. We carry a book entitled Hostage to the Devil, and that's by Malachi Martin. We have a four-tape set with him. And then, of course, we have there are two books on aliens. One is Alien Encounters. The other is Alien Abductions. And we do actually carry a book on aliens, and you call our 800 number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And the book is actually called Alien Intervention. Then, of course, we have talk I gave entitled The Forbidden Secret, because, of course, it is the story of a secret that has been passed down through secret societies for 5,000 years. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, there really are secret societies. You need to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or get the DVD. And you must understand that these secret societies all have certain things in common, because they are all working to bring about a world government and a new world religion. They are staunchly anti-Christian. And then, of course, the new world leader, which is an important part of everything going on today. We carry a book entitled Diary of a Devil Hunter, a gentleman who was deeply involved in Satanism and then came out and would go around across the country talking to police forces and law enforcement about the satanic crimes. And then, of course, the FBI would send out their agent right afterwards to tell people there are no satanic crimes, this is always imaginary. Why would they do that? Why would the FBI have one man assigned simply to debunk the idea that there is anything supernatural out there? And, of course, we have the four-tape set, which goes into something called The Secret, which has been put out by a woman named Rhonda Burns. She sold 5 million copies of the book, about 2 or 3 million of her DVDs. A message has been featured on Oprah Winfrey and Larry King and certainly Ellen DeGeneres and others. And it is all about how you, yes, ladies and gentlemen, you can mobilize the universe with your mind. And you can have anything you want by simply applying the law of attraction. Now, if you watch this film that has been put out, frame by frame, you will find that very often there'll be a word there. It's called meaning Rosicrucianism. And this is really what this is all about, one of the ancient branches of the secret societies that have a secret message for mankind. But let me suggest, ladies and gentlemen, it is an anti-Christian message, because these people worship a different God, and we are involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. Please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Our number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR.